Welcome to Under the Dome, the State Journal Register podcast on all things Illinois politics and state government. I'm editor Angie Muse, and I'm here with State House reporter Doug Finke and political writer Bernie Schoenberg. Well, the big news this week, another Me Too moment touching the House Speaker Mike Madigan's office, and this one even higher up.
Yeah, and it was a rather stunning turnaround because the allegations were made by a member of Madigan's staff in the morning, and by the afternoon, his longtime chief of staff and wearer of actually many hats for Madigan was gone, and that's Tim Mapes, who was a, I would say, a pretty key confidant to the speaker for a great number of years, and not only involved with as chief of staff, making sure the House itself operated the way Madigan felt it should be, but he also had a key role in the Democratic House Democratic campaign apparatus. And it's going to be a very interesting transition without him in that role.
Yeah, and he's also executive director of the Democratic Party of Illinois, which Speaker Madigan has chaired for many years. He stepped down from that role. And we learned this when Speaker Madigan, some hours after Sherry Garrett, who is, I think they call it a minute clerk in the House, so she works in kind of the clerk's operation in the House. And she's from the Springfield area, I believe Petersburg, but this was a press conference in Chicago. She said that she had complained on behalf of at least another woman who said they were inappropriately talked to by a member of the House, and that Tim Mapes had not taken it seriously. She also said that Tim Mapes himself had made some untoward comments, something about, you know, if we can give an indication here, you know, she was going into some sort of meeting and he said, you know, don't let them see the color of your bra or something because of the way that women dress around here. And she was clearly offended by that. Speaker Madigan, in the statement after her press conference, within a few hours, said, at my request, Tim Mapes has resigned from these positions, and, you know, we're moving forward. He named Jessica Basham, who is on his staff, as the new chief of staff for House Democrats. And we're moving forward. And Tim Mapes, with, I don't know, a very long career, I think he's 63, is, you know, will, as some have noted, be getting a pension, but is no longer in the employ of the party or the General Assembly. And he was always, if you'd see Speaker Madigan, rarely, you know, walking or from place to place to go to a meeting or whatever. And sometimes he's alone, but Tim Mapes was often the one with him. Tim Mapes was often around the podium, you know, as business was being conducted in the House. You know, and apparently he was strong in the way he has helped administrate things, move things along, get business done, keep the trains on time, as they say. Always nice to me, but this was just kind of a surprise.
And, you know, as you say, he is about as high ranking, you know, he was the highest ranking person on Madigan's staff, yet the speaker says he had not been aware of any of this.
Yeah.
And
with one exception, and that's former Representative Ken Duncan allegedly said some untoward things to this woman, and she complained about it, and Madigan said he was aware of that incident and was taken care of internally, but the rest of the allegations he said he was not aware of.
Right. So what we're seeing now is we have more people saying that whoever looks into such allegations needs to be independent of the speaker, because the legislative inspector general, who is Julie Porter, who was put in after a three-year absence of anyone in that role before this Me Too stuff came up, she's, I think, working there on a temporary basis through the end of the year. They're looking for someone, and legislation was passed, which has been sent to the governor, to create somewhat more independence in that office for investigations like this, so they just don't come back to the legislative leaders whose members they're affecting. So we'll see what happens. The Ken Duncan situation does make it slightly bipartisan, although he's a Democrat. He stepped away from some of the priorities of the Democratic caucus in the last General Assembly when he sided with Governor Rauner on a couple issues. Governor Rauner actually bragged in an interview he did, I think it was with the Wall Street Journal, that he helped keep Ken Duncan on a trip to New York when there were some key votes going on in the legislature. Ken Duncan wasn't there to help to try to override, as Democrats wanted, a key labor bill that would have allowed arbitration with the AFSCME union instead of the ongoing impasse between the governor's office and that union that hasn't had a new contract since it expired in, I think, mid-2015. So anyway, Ken Duncan was, in a sense, rewarded, or you can say...
Well, he was defeated for re-election.
He was defeated by Juliana Stratton, who is now J.B. Pritzker's running mate, and she's a member of the House now, and it was a clear defeat in the Democratic primary. And, you know, he's out of the legislature after that vote. So that was, I guess, what, 2016. And then just within recent weeks, Governor Rauner named him to the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, the sewer board for the Chicago region, which is a giant agency. Just being on that board is a $70,000 job.
But the governor was very quick the same day these allegations surfaced to say he wanted
Duncan to resign. And Duncan went to a meeting just today as we tape this and told reporters there, I'm not resigning. I didn't say the things that Sherry Garrett said that I said. And it was apparently about, you know, you two women look so nice. You should come to my house and see who's the naughtiest. He claims he did not say that. And so there's nothing to that. The governor called him and asked him to resign. But because he says he didn't do any of this wrong, he says he does not plan to resign. So as of this moment, he is still, and the governor doesn't usually name people to that board. It's an elective board, but the governor was able to name him to a vacancy. So there's some question if the governor has any power to remove him if Ken Duncan wants to stay. And he is a Democrat, but he's appointed by the Republican governor. So it's just kind of part of the situation right now.
And in a sense, he's kind of given a gift back to Madigan at this point, because not all of the heat is being focused solely on Madigan. Now the Democrats have their own charge against Rauner, saying that he appointed this guy who has this history to this board, and he's still there.
And it should be said,
The Madigan, certainly, I think his case is much higher profile.
Oh, I'm not saying that, but
he's still fighting the lawsuit.
Yeah.
He's also still fighting the lawsuit from the Elena Hamilton, the campaign who alleges that, you know, she was sexually harassed by one of his top lieutenants.
Right, and she has, you know, taken heart in Mr. Mape stepping down, and, you know, and in response to some kind of a filing to get her case against the Democratic Party dismissed, you know, she said they want us to be afraid to come forward, and she's just happy more women are coming forward. I will say the whole Ken Duncan thing just also points out just the political interesting thing that Governor Rauner has made light when he was running against Pat Quinn a few years ago of, you know, patronage places and why do people get elected to sewer boards and stuff or something like that. And then he names Ken Duncan, who had a reputation as not, you know, one time I believe he was mad at what people were saying in the House, and he kind of gave the finger to members of the House. You know, we know that he is not always the most even keel kind of guy, and Rauner, you know, named him to this board. And if Pat Quinn had named a former legislator who got beaten in an election to a $70,000 a year job when you go to meetings, you can bet Bruce Rauner would have been probably critical of Pat Quinn for doing something like that.
Well, we probably haven't heard the last of the Madigan situation. Be interesting to see how that does. And then, speaking of people we haven't heard the last of, ex-governor Rod Blagojevich, still in the news after all these years. And I don't know that we've ever seen Donald Trump and Dick Durbin agree on anything before.
Well, we don't know exactly how far it will go, but Rod Blagojevich has been running a campaign to try to get publicity to have Donald Trump commute his sentence, or pardon him, at least commute his sentence. He has served 6 years of a 14-year sentence for corruption. Patty Blagojevich has gone on Fox News, Donald Trump's favorite TV station, we're told, to say that, oh, they're railroading, you know, the FBI railroaded my husband for just doing politics, just like, you know, indicating it's like what the FBI and Robert Mueller and the special counsel are doing to the president, and the president keeps calling that a witch hunt, the Russia investigation. So he, and the president knows Rod Blagojevich, and Rod Blagojevich wrote a from prison, a Wall Street Journal editorial basically saying he was railroaded. Or op-ed. So there is a feeling that because President Trump is interested in pardons and commutations and the power that the presidency has, that he might get Rod Blagojevich out of prison. A lot of politicians are being asked about it. Dick Durbin, U.S. Senator, lives in Springfield, has been quoted as saying he thinks the judge gave Rod Blagojevich a sentence that was way too long at 14 years. This certainly goes with Blagojevich's arguments that he never got any money out of this. He was just talking politics. But, you know, it was more than just trying to get a deal from somebody or something good in return for the golden opportunity of naming someone to Barack Obama's seat. And even charges about that were ultimately dismissed on appeal. But the remaining charges include like shaking down the CEO of a children's hospital in Chicago and not releasing state money for that hospital until he got a $50,000 campaign contribution that they were trying to get. That kind of thing goes beyond normal politics, but Rod Blagojevich doesn't admit that. And he, of course, was on Celebrity Apprentice and was once fired by President Trump and hopes President Trump will now do something else for him, which would be not get him out of a show, but get him out of prison. We'll see if it happens.
Hopefully, I seem to remember his Celebrity Apprentice. I didn't live in Illinois at the time, but I remember watching it. It was interesting.
Well, it was also kind of painful to watch Rod Blagojevich trying to type. I think that's when we learned he really didn't know how to type, so he must have had good people in his office.
I also remember him struggling with the computer task.
He didn't know what to do. But it is also politically interesting. You know, most people on the street, they hate politicians. Rod Blagojevich is a bad guy. Everybody talks him down. So they want him to stay in prison. And among those who think he should just stay where he's at in answering reporters' questions have been both Governor Rauner and J.B. Pritzker, the Democratic candidate for governor.
Right. And of course, you also, with turning back to the governor's race, new ads debuted this week, including one from the governor that had fresh Blagojevich material from the tapes with Pritzker.
Yeah, one of them, there's been a couple of them. One of them that just came out, it's recycled from before, where he's talking about J.B. Pritzker is talking to Rod Blagojevich about what African-American person would be most acceptable or least objectionable to the public, which is the kind of thing that is not the kind of conversation you want to have in public. And, you know, J.B. Pritzker, after that first came out in earlier ads, it was actually a Tribune story that revealed this, and then Governor Rauner ran ads during the Democratic primary, which Pritzker ended up winning.
And in the new tape, they banter about Jeremiah Wright.
Jeremiah Wright.
And Pritzker's heard saying hilarious.
Right. Bill Ayers, the former kind of domestic, you know, associated with domestic terrorists, and Jeremiah Wright, the preacher to President Obama in his younger days, who had said, kind of blasted America instead of, and J.B. Pritzker and Rod Blagojevich are both saying something bad about America that Jeremiah Wright would have said, and they're laughing about, gee, what if we just named him to the Senate? So, yeah, it doesn't look good. Those are not illegal conversations, but they are very bad. It makes you wonder if Blagojevich is released from prison, what ends up being the political fallout of that. Blagojevich will probably talk a lot. Will he say something that helps Rauner by making Pritzker look even worse? Or will Pritzker, you know, somehow be able to turn the tables and will Blagojevich say something bad about Bruce Rauner? Well, that wouldn't hurt him probably. On the other hand, then you have Pritzker running ads against Bruce Rauner. One of them was a guy who works road construction, lives in Bloomington, said he was among 20,000 people laid off during the budget impasse for a time, and, you know, my family lost income, so that was Rauner failed, which is the Pritzker campaign theme. And then another one has been rolled out, which has a bunch of news clips about terrible things happening during the budget impasse, with, you know, social service agencies losing money and closing down. And then they've got the governor saying, I am not in charge, I'm trying to be in charge. And then you've got a news announcer talking about that national conservative magazine cover saying Rauner was the worst governor in America. So they both, these candidates for governor, have more money than we've ever seen before, and we're going to get inundated with these ads, and this week was a beginning.
It's 5 months until the election. Keep that in mind. Wait. 5 months.
We can rest after that. Of course, then we have to see what, you know, there's always another election. Hey, the mayor's race is next spring in Chicago and Springfield and many other cities.
Meanwhile, in the actual governing business of the state, Doug, you know, people are still unraveling the 1,200-plus page state budget that was passed, and you took a look this week at some of the mechanisms in it for reducing the pension obligations, hopefully.
Hopefully. That's it's a big hopeful, too, because there are three basic provisions of the so-called pension reforms that they included in the budget. One that caps late career salary increases, which school districts in particular build into their contracts for administrators and even rank-and-file teachers, that they agree to give them some fairly significant increases at the very end of their career, which helps boost their pension, but then the district is only on the hook for paying the salary for a fairly short period of time. So anyway, this legislation will limit those to 3%, and if you school district wanted to award more than that, they're responsible for the pension costs. The other two provisions are buyout provisions. One which would pay people who are vested in the pension system but no longer active in it. In other words, if you worked for the state for a long enough period to be vested in the pension system but now took a job, say, in the private sector, you're still on the books for a pension. They came up with a plan to pay you part of the cash value of what your pension would be, basically in order to get you out of the system. The other provision is a little more complicated. Currently, Tier 1 retirees get a 3% annual increase in their pension benefits. It's often called a COLA, but it's got nothing to do with inflation. It's automatic, and it's compounded. And that's one of the biggest drivers of increasing pension costs, according to analysts who have looked at this stuff. So the idea is to, again, offer people a cash buyout for a part of the value of this future pension benefit. And they could take that and have that money available to them immediately. And in exchange, their future raises will only be a 1.5% a year, not compounded.
So what's the incentive for someone getting the 3% compounded to do that?
Immediate access to the money. The pension benefits cannot be willed to heirs, for example. So if you took some of this money right now, even though you have to put it in another retirement vehicle like an IRA or something of that sort, it's still there. It's your money. And if something would happen to you and you passed away, you could will that money to your heirs. Otherwise, it would just be lost.
Right.
And they think that is going to be incentive enough to do it. There are people who think the estimates that they are basing this on are optimistic, to say the least, but we'll have to see where it goes.
Right, and I think the total savings from that are, what, like $445 million, they
right.
say, from all those
three
pension changes?
Right.
But can that even happen within the coming fiscal year? I know your story mentioned that the pension systems will take a while to get this stuff up and running.
It'll take it a while to get up and running, plus the buyout provisions are actually applied to people retiring over the next 3 years, I believe it is. So they're not all going to take it immediately. And the fact is, you have to be at retirement age to make this this option on the buyout provisions. So, they're booking all the savings right now, but it's not going to be realized immediately.
And finally, wrapping up this week, we also had a couple more administrative changes among the governor's cabinet agency heads.
Yeah, someone named Stephen Curta, I believe, is the new Veterans Affairs Director, announced at Quincy when the governor was kind of presenting the $53 million for first-year spending on a new Quincy Veterans Home building. Mr. Curta, who I think he's a retired brigadier general, something. He has a good military background, and he replaces Erica Jeffries, who went to the private sector and kind of has been director through the Legionella outbreak and, you know, the governor's response to that in the last few years. And then also Felicia Norwood, who's a familiar name in state government because she had been a director in the past, but she announced she's leaving as director of health care and family services to go to a health care company or health insurance company called Anthem. So more change coming, and that agency oversees Medicaid, and that's a giant program that recently had massive changes to new providers, and one that will be watched to see how all those changes roll out.
Well, that's it for Under the Dome this week. We will be back next week. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with the latest that's happening in Springfield.